Shut up and sit down.
Hello, everyone. This is Scott Lurie. Today on The Hard Truth with Scott Lurie, I've got an unbelievable guest. You guys are going to love listening to JD Sustar. JD's got an amazing background coming from nothing, coming from the death of the world and found his love in real estate. And we're going to get to talk about it because I know a lot of our listeners are potentially in the same scenario JD was in 2018. So JD, welcome to The Hard Truths. We're really excited to have you, and I'm very excited to share your story with our listeners.
Yeah, man. Thank you guys for having me today. I'm excited to hang out and chat for a little while.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to do all of that. So JD, you know, let's jump right in for a minute. So we talk to a lot of listeners. Our focus is really, how do you get started? Real estate is the wealth and the creator of a lot of financial freedom that really comes out of real estate, whether it's a W-2 supplemental investment career or whether it's your passion and single career. How did you, what happened, JD? You're broke, you're 2018, you're scratching your head. You were probably pissed off a little bit. And what was going through your mind?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. I had gotten to debt like so many people do right out of college in 2013, graduated a bunch of student loans, decided I need a jacked up truck like every other guy down here in the South, bought my wife a wedding ring, blah, 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 same old, same old. And so next thing I know, I'm over $100,000 in debt and I'm 22 years old and I'm about to get married. And that's a problem.
Yeah, the problem. Going the wrong direction.
Yeah, big time. And so for me, what I did, the next probably 5 years really was claw my way out of that. And I did that through another, you know, that's a whole different story, personal finance story, really, where we really took control of our money, budgeted, cut expenses. I worked on increasing my income, through, you know, getting into different careers. And so that's a whole journey in itself. We finally get to 2018. We got our finances pretty darn cleaned up. I think I had a couple car loans out, but they were minimal interest. The student loans were gone. You know, the credit card's gone. The wedding ring's gone. And I'm at this point where I have extra cash for the first time in my life. We got an emergency fund in place. We just had a kid. I'm like, okay, like we're in a good spot. What do I do with this extra money? And if you're like the majority of people, at least where I live, it's you go buy a boat. You know, you get back into debt. You go, like, how can we go waste this money? I didn't want to do that. And so I had to make a decision of, all right, where am I going to invest this? I knew I wanted a different future for my life. And I knew the only way to get there was to invest. And so it was deciding where do I want to go? Because there's a lot of different options. You know, you got stocks and nowadays crypto and, you know, you could start a business, whatever else. But for me, it was real estate. And the easy answer for me, I'm a pretty simple guy, is I look and say, for centuries, this asset has been making people very wealthy. Just for centuries.
You know? So you had that thought in your head. You had that thought when you were in 2013, when you were frivolously spending money and creating the hole that you got into. You knew somehow you had that moment. Was there a role model or a somebody that you're like, that person's wealthy and they're in real estate? Or how did you come to the conclusion that real estate have for hundreds of years have been making people wealthy? How did you know that? Where did you, was that in a book you read? Was that in an online course? Was that your friend was wealthy because he's in real estate? How did you think real estate, how did you know to connect those two dots?
Yeah. So I think a number of things, a lot of things compounded on me. I listened to a lot of podcasts. So I was just hearing, you know, at the time it was like Bigger Pockets was one of the bigger ones. Reading The Rich Dad, Poor Dads, reading Richest Man in Babylon, which I absolutely love that book. You know, you always hear the statistic, 90% of people who are millionaires have real estate. And then, you know, so though I'm hearing all this stuff, I'm listening to all this stuff. And then I look close to me, my father-in-law had actually bought land and he wouldn't even consider himself like a big time real estate investor. He just lived in Central Florida and bought land that he enjoyed buying. Like he would buy property because he wanted to play on it. Well, he held on to it for 30 years and it worked out in his favor. Now that property, all those properties are worth way more. And so I saw, wow, you know, for him, land and some rentals down in the Keys have done pretty well. And then one of the biggest things for me that really put the cherry on top was my best friend. His name's Gaston Albergati, got into real estate right when we graduated college. And I would say by the time we were 27, he'd have to verify this, 27, 28, he was already worth over $2 million, which is pretty darn good.
So you and him took different paths graduating college. You bought a truck and he bought real estate, and you guys figured out that he's a smart guy and I've made some mistakes.
That's exactly right. But what was cool is while I'm digging myself out of this hole of debt, we're best friends. So he's still in South Carolina. I'm in Florida at this time, and he's telling me all these real estate stories he's doing. And so it was essentially like I was getting mentored in real estate, but wasn't what it was. It was just two buddies talking on the phone. And he started out being a bird dog, finding deals. Well, then, they would like present them to buyers. They had buyers. Well, then it was like they were weaseling their way into owning some equity in some of the deals they found. Well, then he started keeping some of the properties. And so I moved back to South Carolina from Florida and got my finances cleaned up. And I mean, you got a lot of listeners, I think, who are kind of wanting to get started. I can still to this day remember that fear of, I know this is what I need to do. I have somebody in my corner, my best friend who's been doing it, who's now a multimillionaire. We're not even close to being 30 years old yet. He's holding my hand now at this point, and I am still scared to buy that first property.
Listen, I remember buying my first property. You're scared like you just stole something or like you just committed a crime. You know, it's part of that process where you're like, holy smokes. But let's back up for 2 minutes, JD, because I think it's important for a lot of listeners to understand. There was the moment when you said, I got to change my life, right? I'm $100,000 in debt. I have a girl. I'm getting married. We're probably going to have kids. I want a better future for my family and my life. Yet you can't enjoy the constant stress of debt because it's unwavering and it doesn't go away. You then in 2008 said, hey, I'm going to make a change for the better. Now's my time. And I'm going to be scared and I don't know anything. I'm going to learn. I'm going to listen. I'm going to podcast. I'm going to learn how to do it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to make change for the better and I'm going to be prudent with it. And you took what was a small nest egg. How much did you have to get started? You remember how much you had when you said you finally, 2018, got to the point where you were ready to make your first purchase?
My first property, I put $15,000 down and about $10,000 into it.
So you had a $25,000 of cash investment of yours into your first property that changed your entire projection trajectory in life and your entire mindset that, hey, my best friend is a multimillionaire at the age of 30. I'm barely just scraped out of what was the bottom of the world, negative in debt with a really cool car to show for it. And instead, now I need to go build wealth. And so a lot of listeners ask that question. A lot of people are scared to ask this question, right? They're more scared to ask the question of how do I get to where I want to go versus the answer of, well, I'm here and I'm scared, but I can solve it because I got a good support network around you. So let's talk about that first purchase, if you don't mind. So you're ready to get going. Did you, and you were scared about it. You remember it vividly in your mind. How much conversation did you have with your best friend who was your unofficial mentor at the time?
Yeah. He brought me the property. He was going to buy it for himself. And he was like, you need to get in. He has his license too. So he was brokering the deal. Wasn't like, he got paid on it, but he wanted his buddy to get in. I mean, what a great guy, And so I still tried to back out. I was so scared. We're getting close. I'm like, dude, I want out. I was like, I can't make myself do it. I'm scared. I've worked so hard to get out of this consumer debt. I don't want to get back into debt. And it took me a while to really understand and comprehend the difference between the debt that I had just escaped from that was like kind of like quicksand keeping me from really moving forward to this debt that has now freed my future.
Right. And so let's talk about that because that's one of the biggest points where people really need to understand. Debt, when used properly, is not the quicksand that most consumers are used to, right? There's a lot of people that get punched in the face in the consumerism where you're on a credit card debt that goes from 18 to 27. You miss a payment. Now you're at 35 and the quicksand keeps going and you're like, holy hell, versus what real estate is when you learn, hey, this debt, which is allowing me to build my rental portfolio. And oh, by the way, the tenants get to pay that debt for us so long as they're full and occupied. This is different debt, right? This isn't debt that comes out of my pocket. This is debt that comes out of the business's pocket to help me grow and sustain ourselves. So walk me through that education experience, because that is, a very important piece for the listener, right? The listener has to really think to themselves, hey, I'm in consumer debt, right? The consumer debt in our country is at an all-time high, right? So anybody listening to this most likely has some form of consumer debt. That's just the way the world we live in. Talk me through that a little bit, because that fear, right? That fear you were looking to get out of the deal for, I think is the fear that a lot of people are sitting on the sidelines right now with, right, JD? They're saying to themselves, holy hell, I'm so strapped with fear that I'm going to repeat what I just went through or what I currently have or what's debilitating me today. Why am I going to compound it? So talk me through a little bit of your positive experience of why you said, all right, let's go. How did you overcome that experience?
It was quite a process. It took me a while. It took me a long while. I owned multiple properties before I really felt comfortable that I was doing the right thing. But you alluded to it. When you're taking on these credit card debts, essentially there's no collateral and you're buying stuff that isn't of value. It's gone. It's disappeared. And not only that, it now has these ridiculously high variable interest rates. And sure, paying 18, 20, 25%, well, you're not going to make that in an invest. You know, you're not making that. That's gone, right? Whereas when we're talking about buying real estate, we're looking at what, 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%. I mean, whatever it is today, 7.5%, 8% stabilized debt that's collateralized by a piece of real estate that, if we look at history, is going to appreciate in value. And not only sure is it going to appreciate in value, the tenants are now paying off that mortgage for us.
And you can also, JD, also, your improvements increase the value, your energy, your effort, your sweat equity, your improvements to the landscaping, your improvements to the physical structure of it increase the value of it versus the other side of it, which is remarkably amazing that our world has become such suckers for the consumerism. Because what you said 2 minutes ago is so true. You get to spend all this consumer money on nothing. You get at the end of the day, nothing to really show for what you're buying, right? You might buy some chicken wings. You might buy lunch. You might buy some dinner. You might buy some things, right? But it's materialistic garbage at the end of the day that's costing you, by the way, 18.5% to 27% to 30% every time you eat it. That chicken wing that you paid $12 for is really $37 a wing today after you put the interest into it. So I think JD's point is very well received for everybody. Everyone needs to stop and pause. Remember, the consumerism that's out there, the vicious cycle of the credit card world that's out there, is not for the benefit of consumer. There are very large New York Stock Exchange companies that are looking to take advantage of the consumers. The higher our debt's going, and by the way, I don't know what your prediction is, JD, but my prediction is the debt's going to continue to rise like crazy in our world because that's what we do, right? We got to keep up with the Joneses and buy junk to make sure that junk feels good with junk. I don't know. It's weird.
Spot on.
So JD, the one thing you didn't mention, and I'm kind of interested in understanding your thought process on this, is that, you know, your variable interest rate debt that you climbed out of over a period of 5 years, right? And then you get into a fixed rate mortgage, let's say you call it 6, 7, 8, whatever the interest rate is, it's an irrelevant data point. The point I'm trying to get to is then you get to this amortizing piece of it, right? Which is that if you do it over 15 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, that's where the power of this real estate really comes in, right? Because you can set up that in 20 years, so long as your tenant's in the building for 20 years paying down your mortgage, when you make your 20th year payment, right, the conclusion of it after 240 months, you owe nothing, right? Your balance goes down every month. Your value goes up and your balance goes down. Think about that paradigm. Why don't they teach that in class? Your value goes up, your debt goes down, and those two things come together and JD's wealthy, right? That's an amazing formula that people don't really think about. So walk me through a little bit about your thesis on because you're building this portfolio. You haven't stopped. You're going. Finance Cowboy's on the horse. He's running down the road right now. The question becomes is, what is your strategy in terms of buying the rental properties? Where are you putting it into debt once you get it stabilized? How's that working out for you? And what is your plan 3-5 years from now?
Yeah. So I'll put debt on. I'll say the majority of my structures, I have a lender, a local lender, who's a 20-year fixed program product.
So talk us through what that is, because a lot of the consumers might not understand when you say it's a 20-year fixed product. What does that mean to everybody?
So like if you go and you buy a home that you're going to live in, you know, you're going to put just say 20% down and your interest rate is 4% and you're going to pay that 4% for 30 years until the house is paid off. So the local bank that
or I you move with,
yeah,
or
you move. Move. Exactly. Which I think the average person lives in their house no longer than 5 years,
you know? Right. Exactly.
And so the product that one of my lenders has is a 20-year fix. So it's just like that. You put a percentage down and then you're on a 20-year amortized note, and that interest rate, whatever you sign on at the beginning, say it's 5%, stays the same for all 20 years.
Right. Unless so, you read. So think about that, guys. Just think about the power of what JD does. Once he gets to the point where he has this loan closed, right? So he's fixed and closed. He's paying a 20-year note. So that's 240 payments on an amortization schedule, which is just a schedule of the pay down, the principal reduction pay down. And his interest rate is fixed equally for that 20-year program. So there are DSCR programs that are 30 years and 20 years and 15 years. This program that JD is using is a 20-year fixed program, which is amazing. JD's interest rate, now, are you taking title to these in your personal name? Do you take title to these in an LLC?
All commercial or DSCR loans. It's all in LLC.
Okay,
it's all
in LLC. So let's go through that. So, so these are all commercial loans. That means that JD puts these in his company name. So JD's personal debt service or debt to income ratio is not impacted by this. So JD's striking 100 for 100 right now. He's then putting him into a DSCR, debt service coverage ratio loan. So that covers basically the difference between the income and the PITI of what's being spent. So he gets a ratio coverage, and usually the ratio is 1 or 1.2, depending on where you end up. And then JD puts it away on the shelf. Hey, 123 Main Street is on the shelf for JD for 20 years. And you know what JD has to do for that 20 years? Well, other than kick back and relax, he's got to make sure that that property is rented and he's collecting rent for 20 years. That's JD's job. He can make sure the grass is cut. He can make sure all the other things are happening. But the difference between his $700 a month payment and his $1,200 a month income that he's bringing in, between those two numbers, that $500 goes right into JD's pocket. And of the $700 that's being paid, we have interest, right? So you have interest that's being paid based on the fixed rate, but you also have the principal pay down. So over 20 years, those numbers being paid down. So if he starts with $100,000, the next month he owes $99,700. And every month that's being paid down. That's the power of the real estate. That's the power of this game, right? The power of what JD's building is, JD started negative. Now JD started with, a $15,000 deal that he invested in. And now JD's building up a portfolio. So if you think about the power of where he has gone and what he's doing, this is pretty remarkable, guys. I'd like you to just pay attention a little bit. So JD, walk me through it. You buy your first home, you buy your second home, you buy your third home. You said you got to the moment after you bought a bunch of homes that you said, I think I'm doing the right thing, right? You went from scared and fearful of the debt, right? You were scared and fearful because you've been burned by the debt, right? You bought all this crap and thank God you were a great consumer and you paid it all off and okay, but now you're buying real estate and you were scared again. Give me the moment when you were like, all right, I'm doing the right thing. And why do you feel like that was the moment where you were doing the right thing and then you elevated it to say, I'm going to go make this my future, my career?
Mm-hmm. I believe it's hard to say, to be honest. I can't tell you the exact moment, but
the general thesis where you was when you went to lay your head on a pillow and you're like, hey, honey, I think I did the right. We're on the right trajectory, right? Let's say the trajectory path was right.
Yeah, when I looked at my PFS, my personal financial statement, when I was 29 years old, so it'd have been 2 years after we started investing, and it said over $1 million, and a couple of years before that, we were pretty much at zero net worth.
Okay, so I'm sorry, because now we're going to go on one of those tangents I just talked about. So I apologize. So 2013, you probably didn't know what a PFS statement was. And I encourage everybody who's listening to make sure you have your own personal financial statement. Even if it's not what you want it to be today, it gives you a very clear path to your personal financial statement. And so what JD was just saying is that when he, after 2 years, so this is after 2 years of hard work and tough energy, JD saw his PFS. So his paper value, what JD's worth on paper, is now worth how much?
It was a little over $1 million. Now it's over $2 million, but in 2020, it was over $1 million.
So in 2020, after coming out of the ruins of the world of what was this, you know, you can call it being a sucker to the screens of the world that we were in, but I'm not, I'll be nicer than that. I'll say you're part of the, of our apocalypse of our social society, that materialistic things really make you better. You in 2 years of energy, right? From 2018 to 2020, you did something remarkable, right? You went from, as you said, in the ruins to having on paper, JD is now worth $1 million. So if you're a listener, right, let's say you're a listener, you're listening to JD's, by the way, JD's got amazing Instagram. I hope he was going to wear a cowboy hat for us today, but he chose to wear this other hat.
Headphones over.
Oh yeah. That's a good point. but he has these great Instagram reels. So I encourage you to check him out. But my point of saying that is when you think about what he's done in a year, how many people would work really hard? I always ask this question. How hard would you work to make $50,000? How hard would you work to build your financial worth to be $1 million? JD created the sauce. He figured it out himself that, hey, the sauce for me to get from zero or negative zero, so whatever that number is, to positive $1 million of net worth, right? So net worth, the value of his home, whatever the value of his portfolio is, less his debt equals his equity. And that's what creates your PFS. That's what creates your net worth. Your assets minus your liabilities. So your assets, the home, right? So your assets, the home, it also could be your crypto. It could also be a boat that you own free and clear. Whatever your assets are, people have a lot of different assets. We focus on real estate because that's what we are, real estate people. Your assets of your real estate minus your liabilities. So JD mentioned to us already that we've got some 20-year fixed rate mortgages. So those come under the liabilities. And when he takes those two things and puts them together, he gets what is his net worth. And JD, in 2020, 2 years after the apocalypse of the finance cowboy coming out of the dungeon, he comes out with $1 million in net worth. You got to, first of all, be very proud of yourself. Cause I mean, it's a remarkable feeling to come from where you are to where you got to. Tell me how that felt.
Dude, it feels awesome. I grew up a pastor's son. I'm sitting in my house half a mile from my dad's church.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's great, but we have money. Pastors don't make a lot of money. It wasn't a mega church. So money wasn't something we talked about a lot. We weren't talking about, you know, buying real estate or going to our beach house. My family, we've bought a beach house now. It's like my kids get to hear, hey, we're going to the beach house. We live on 11 acres. I didn't grow up on 11 acres in a big old house and a swimming pool. And so like didn't have anything, was never given anything, came out of college with no leads, just applied like any regular old guy, got on at Cintas, driving a box truck, making $45,000 a year in 2013. And then I look back in 2020, 7 years later, coming from just a regular old home, making a pitiful income, really, right out of college, to now being worth over $1 million and building this portfolio. Dude, it was crazy. I mean, there's a lot of work when you're in the middle of it. And as I continue to grow older, I learn more and more to always enjoy the journey more. But like, I was just so focused on next property, scale, that I wasn't really necessarily paying attention to what it was doing for me until I took a step back. And I don't remember what made me really just say, all right, let's just like pump the brakes for a second and see where we're at. And, look and say, holy crap. Now $1 million for a lot of people, that's not much at all, but for where I had come from, it was a fantastic feeling. Now I will say this, I didn't feel like I could just retire and, never have to work a day again. It wasn't that, but I have enough sense to know how powerful the principle of compound is, and especially compound interest. And I knew that once I get to that 1 million mark, watching that compound over the next 3 years compared to what I just done this 3 years, I said, holy crap, I'm 30 years old. Barring something catastrophic, we're going to be potentially pretty darn wealthy, and I can maybe do whatever I want before 35. And so when that hit me, I was like, right, this is awesome.
And that moment when you're sitting, not to bring you up to the worst moments, but when you were sitting in that box truck with Cintas somewhere in America, walking into one of your worst clients you ever could imagine, to the feeling of actually having financial freedom 7 years later. I guess our country also has this problem devaluing the dollar, because getting to $1 million, that's a 99% of the people in our country would dream about getting to $1 million of net worth. So I commend you. I think that, you know, when you get there, you need to take a moment of self-reflection to say, I've been there, but I also, your story has to be the inspiring notion for everybody else that's listening, because our listeners come from all walks, right? Our listeners are high net worth attorneys that could have a negative dollar, right? Because they have the consumerism problem, right? You could have somebody that's making $300,000 a year, and if they're spending $500, they're going the wrong direction. They're going negative $200. And JD has figured out, hey, I got to pump the brakes, because pumping the brakes is important to get me back to where I want to go, which is level. And then from level, now we're going upward, right? Now we're getting there. So I want to take that time, JD, just to let our listeners understand the power of what it takes to get to a net worth of $1 million. It's possible for everybody, right? I don't think that JD had any special sauce. JD said he came from a pastor's son. They didn't have money. He was driving a box truck with $100,000 in debt at the age of 22 or 23. And saying to himself, man, this is terrible, but he didn't understand how terrible it was until the tree started shaking. And, you know, you compliment his friend or somebody else, you know, but it might be the person at the coffee store that says to you, hey, how's it going today? Or you never know who's going to impact your life. And I like to tell my children, hey, be friends with everyone, because you don't know who everyone is. Everyone can impact your life in a very powerful way. And this one was your best friend who really impacted you to just give you the push, right? The push and the confidence to say, go do this. And yeah, he's a broker, and yeah, you got paid a fee, and yeah, who cares? But if he went to push you and you would have regressed, I mean, you might be working for Cintas still today, miserable, and saying to myself, man, I'm part of the 99 right now, and I want to figure out how to be part of the 1%. So the reason I share that with everyone is I just want everyone to take a moment, because we get so many inquiries. How do I get started? Right? Like, it's that moment where someone's seeking that financial freedom. And I always tell people, you got to just get started, right? Like, I don't know how to tell you to get started, but get started, whether it's doing something, get involved. And when I had a very similar story to yours, JD, you know, I came out of a family business and I kind of tried to figure out where I was going. But everybody I knew that was wealthy had real estate in their background. I don't care where it was, whether they were big developers or they owned single family homes, or they were, you know, this is going back 20 years ago. I just knew, I'm like, God, how are these people so wealthy? How are they living this financially freedom life? And I'm in a family business, and those have ups and downs like you wouldn't believe, right? And so I want everyone to gather before we get into the compounding of this, because this is, the compounding is the most fun, right? We're going to talk about that in a minute. But this notion that JD came out of the ruins and was smart enough and dangerous enough to go forward doesn't just mean that it happened, right? He was scared out of his mind. He had to buy four more. He didn't know if he was doing the right thing because of debt. And then he was able to recover and say, oh my God, I just did my PFS and I'm worth $1 million. And as JD said, that doesn't mean I can go retire. That doesn't mean I can go do nothing. That doesn't mean any of that. So don't take your foot off the gas, because we're going to talk about what to do when you're going 60. We now need to go to 100. But how to do that, you've got to still be able to take a moment and say, I did it. Now I'm going to keep going. Now my momentum train has left the station, and there's nothing going to come in the way of JD getting to 2 million or to 10 million, because it's not happening. JD's on the train. And would you agree with this statement? The high of being successful is the greatest high you can get to in your mind, right? There's no better feeling. It's a euphoric internal feeling, right? It's not like you can walk around and people are like, oh, that guy's, but in your mind, right? You sleep better. You feel better. You're more comfortable in life. Your wife and kids are happier. You can go to a beach house that you enjoy. Like, I mean, that feeling is what to you?
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. It is, it's a great feeling. That's the only way I know how to put it. It's a great feeling.
It's a great feeling. You can't tell anyone how it feels because it's so great, but it is a great feeling. So, congratulations on the first million. JD, so talk me through. So in your first 2 years, you got to a million, right? So you had no recipe, right? You had no secret sauce. You're a pretty simple guy, according to the world. you worked hard every day. You love what you're doing and you got to a million. And now we're saying to ourselves, well, I'm here, but now I got to keep going. So walk me through that, because you touched upon compounding, and I think compounding is probably the most important thing, because that's what gets me the most excited, right? I see I want to start from here, and when you get here, it's like, well, now I can go all the way to here, and then you can go all the way to there, right? And so I'm trying to figure out, how do you keep that train going? So walk us from the 1 million point to the 2 million. So 1 million of net worth equaled how many properties did you have at that time when you got to 2020?
So I don't remember exactly, but I think one thing that's probably even more helpful for my story, even just from going 1 million to 2 million, is how I was able to scale to get into the millions.
Yeah. Please help me. Oh yeah. We never even talked about that, but just tell us. So where did the cash come from? How'd you scale? I'd love to hear that part of it.
That's how I was able to, people are probably sitting here thinking like, well, he must've had a lot of money to be able to, you know, buy that much real estate. You know, and I got to where I was making a good income, but that's really not how I did it. So first few properties I bought, I used my own capital. So I'd saved up, like I said, bought it first from 15,000, probably put 10 into it. Same second property, same type of situation. So I get two or three properties in and I spent 50 to 60 grand and that's all I had. And I was like, well, I don't have any more money. What am I going to do now? And so I had to make a decision of like, hey, I'll be content with these three properties and I'll save up and maybe try to buy one a year and I'll still be wealthier than most. Or I figure out a different strategy and I go and execute it. And so for me, what I started doing was using other people's money. Yep. So there's a number of ways you can use other people's money, a lot of ways. But what worked for me was having a private lender. So somebody in your network to lend you money. And you may say, well, I don't have that person right now. Well, that's okay. A lot of people can't just snap their fingers and have somebody in their network today who will lend them money. But if you network and you go deep enough into what I call the network tree, you will find somebody who will lend to you on your real estate deal. So it could be as close to you as a father or an uncle or a cousin or a coworker or a coworker's friend or another investor or just a high net worth old man at your church who wants to diversify his portfolio. Look, guys, there's 7 billion people on planet Earth. There's
right.
330 million in the US. You just need one to say, I will fund your real estate deals and it will completely change your life like it has mine. And then we can get to.
So JD, one question for you. So do you feel, so I think I love how you started, right? You did it with your own money. How do you feel that impacted your ability to find that one person, right? One private lender that, because now you can say to that one person, hey, I already own XYZ versus, hey, I'm just getting started. I've got this new novel idea. I'm going to go buy real estate. How important was that piece? Because a lot of what we see and a lot of what we talk to is that you got to have some money, some skin in the game to get started, because some people want to start with nothing. And I don't have a solution for that, but I do have a solution for a guy that says, okay, I've already bought 3 of these houses. I'm already successful, right? I'm successful in my own right. I just want to be more successful. Can I borrow your money? And when they come to us and say, can I borrow your money? You get a lower down payment. You get a better total loan because we have more confidence in your ability to do what you're doing versus a guy that's never done it before. So walk me through that process, because you found somebody to lend you money, whoever that was, call him John or Bob, and tell us your pitch to Bob. Bob, I am JD. You probably haven't met me before, or it could be someone you did. What did you say to him?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps to answer your first question. I think it definitely helps to have properties under your belt. But I truly don't think it's a necessity, but because of depending on who you do it with. I think you could do it with another investor or somebody who's been in the real estate game long enough and you may not have any properties, but they would still lend to you because they will look at the actual deal. And so what the secret sauce to getting private funding is actually knowing how to get good deals. If you can figure out how to find good deals, the money will come. Always remember that.
So guys, hold on 1 second. So I think what you're saying, because this is a very important piece of it, is a good deal always sells itself.
Most of the time, unless you're just a crappy person.
Right. But a good deal at the end of the day, if you have a good deal that has good metrics, right? I'm buying a house that's worth $100,000 for $15,000. Who says no to that investment, right? Because that investment's a good investment. And so, yes, you have to learn how to convey that, but I think you're 100% right. Finding the good deals, finding prudent good deals, especially in today's world, is so important to help you be successful at what you're doing. And so I think that's a very important and critical piece to this. So you found a good deal, JD. Let's just walk through the scenario. You found yourself a good deal. You found someone who's a private lender who could help you get with some growth and some money. And then you approach them and you say what? Because you know what happens with a lot of people? They get scared, right? They're not only scared of taking on debt, they're scared of talking to people, right? Communicating, interpersonal communication, asking the question. They're fearful of rejection, right? Remember at the school dance, the little cute girl over there, I'm scared to go ask to dance. So guess what? You're never dancing with her. So walk us through that, because I want to give our listeners the confidence to understand, like, hey, guys, go ask the question. The worst they say is what? No. You know what I'm saying? Tell me what that is.
You have to come to the realization that you're not begging for money. I teach my students this all the time. I'm like, you're not a beggar. So get out of that mindset. This is a business deal from one business person to the next. And they are in it to make money and you are in it to make money. And so when you approach it with that confidence of, hey, not they got the upper hand because I need money from them, but I have the upper hand because I have a heck of a deal. Do you want this or should I go give it to another private lender? Do you want to make 11%, 12% on lending your money out? Or do you want me to go to so-and-so? And you're not going to say it.
Let's go through that. Cause that's a really, I mean, that's spot on, right? So JD, so you go to them with a confident approach to, I've got a great deal. Do you want to take this opportunity and be my partner, be my private lender, or should I take it somewhere else? And that's the confidence that I think you have to just innately have to some level, but you can also be taught that to learn the deal, sell the deal, go out and communicate the deal. You'll find that private lender. You're 100% right.
I mean, yeah. And they're making 12, let's just call it 12%. Just throw a number out there.
Sure.
12%. And they have the home as collateral, right? And then you want to try and stay away from this if you're the investor, but there's probably a decent amount of times you're going to personally guarantee that loan as well. And so it's like they're in a good spot. The lenders are in a good spot to be taken care of should something happen to you. And so it's not like this huge risky thing for them. Number one, if it works, which if you have a good deal, it will work. They're making 12%. The market's not returning that, right? They can't do real estate deals really that quick and get their money back that quick, making 12%. So they're making really good money. And then if you do default, guess what? They have a heck of a property with a lot of equity that they can go and make money on. So it's a win-win for both.
Yeah. So JD, because a lot of people that you talk to is really fearful of how do you, you talked about the network tree, and I think the network tree is a very important piece of our lives, right? So I teach my kids, and I've taught them since they've been very young, be friends with everyone, right? Because if you're friends with everyone, your network tree is pretty large, right? But there's a lot of people that, you know, this is not a knock on the Cintas driver, but the Cintas driver doesn't, in his mind, potentially think that his network tree is of merit, right? Because he's like, I'm a Cintas driver. But the reality is, quite honestly, that Cintas driver's network tree probably should be one of the larger ones because of his interaction with everybody that he's interacting with every day. You don't know when you stop into that business to go service that business owner might be an investor or the VP of sales or VP of safety or whoever might be an investor. So walk us through how you approach the network tree. Cause I love that terminology. And I think that's very important for listeners to really get their arms around the network tree and the impression that you create of who you are to your network tree is very important.
I always say start with friends, family, and coworkers. That's low hanging fruit. Start there. And you may say, okay, none of them will do it. Well, that's fine. Start asking them, hey, who do you know? Who can you make the connection to me with that has invested in real estate or that's well off or that you know invest? Your parents know somebody who's a big time investor, whether it's real estate, stocks, something. your sister, your cousin, your uncle knows somebody and has somebody close to them who's a big dog, high net worth person, coworker, same thing. So start there and let them expand your tree and make those connections, because those are going to be, you know, pretty decently intimate connections because those are the people that trust you the most. They can put in a good word for you. And then next, I tell folks, if you want to find a private lender, go to 3 local real estate meetups and you'll have a private lender. I don't think you need more than
that. And the local real estate meetup. But so JD, let's go back to one point you just mentioned. So you've got friends and family, right? So let's go through that group, right? Because I think you're 100% right that you start there, start at the core. Are you sending out a mass text to them? Are you calling each one of them? Are you emailing them? Hey, as you know, I'm interested in real estate. I'm working on an investment. Do you know anybody that'd be interested in being my partner lender as I continue to grow my business? How do you talk about the communication? Because a lot of people are lost in these phones, right? This thing right here. A lot of people get stuck behind this phone and forget about personal engagement, but it's also time consuming, right? So walk me through how you like to teach that or talk about that. Cause that's I think a very important piece of this.
I think it's good to be really cool, have some emotional intelligence, have some feel. So talk to mom and dad, sister, uncle, cousin. Hey, do you know somebody? You can call them, you can text them, you know, be at their house, be at dinner one night. But hey, I'm really interested in starting to buy real estate. I've been analyzing some deals. I found a decent area and a couple properties that piqued my interest. But, you know, I want to pick somebody's brain who's been doing this for a little while and sit down and, you know, kind of see what they think. And, have them make that connection and then go and sit down with that person. And just don't go sit down with the first connection you make who could potentially be a private lender and say, will you lend to me? You know, that's not going to work.
Right.
Be a human being. So sit down, and the best thing you can do, I've been in sales my entire career, and number one sales advice I can give anybody, and there's a lot of pieces of sales advice, but just ask people about themselves. Everybody's favorite topic is themselves. So sit there, and for the first hour that you're meeting with this person, just ask them about themselves. Ask them about their life, their business, real estate, everything they've done in it. And then once you've buttered them up, you guys are buddies, there's trust there. Tell them briefly, do not spend hardly any time on yourself. Just say, hey, I'm brand new to this. I'm looking in these areas, or I need help looking in these areas. Wherever you're at in the journey, where would you recommend me looking? What's your strategy? And then say, you know, I'm looking to, have a capital partner. So if you run across anybody that you know who likes to lend to deals, let me know. And that's the most passive way to ask somebody if they'll lend to your deal without saying, will you lend to my deal? Now, if you have a hard deal, you could say, hey, I have a great deal here. Would love if you want to lend to it. Check it out. If not, do you know anybody who would?
Yeah. And I think what you said to get started is very, it's America, right? What's everyone's favorite thing to talk about? Themselves. And I think it's a very easy, comfortable question. How are you? Tell me about your family. What do you do for a living? Tell me about your kids. People will talk about all of those topics for hours, which is what I think you also said, which is a great connection, JD, which I'd like to put together for them. When you get them to like you, when you're spending time with them, you're building up trust to get to the point where when you ask them the question, do you know a lender? They now have trust in you that they're going to be successful with you and they might be considering that investment. So build up and invest the time. And so on those meetings you've gone on, I mean, are you spending a couple hours with them at the time?
Yeah, it just depends. I mean, some people are on a busier schedule. I just, you know, whatever they have available. If they tell me they got an hour,
They'll sit. If they're willing not to, they're not to. But you're sitting there, you know, phones off. You're not texting and calling your brother. You're focused on them and listening to what they have to say in an effort with the soul energy to create this trust so that they can help you embark on your business plan. And I'm always marveled by, you know, the lack of energy people put into being successful, right? Because I know people want to be successful. And people tell me all the time, oh, I want to be successful. I'm like, that's great. So does everybody. I said, but how much time and energy are you willing to put into it? And people put in very little, right? The amount of time that they're putting into it is always little. I always say to somebody, how hard would you work? Understand that there's 2,080 hours in a given year to work year. How hard are you willing to work to make $100,000? And if someone said, I'll work 2,080 hours, I'm like, well, go do it. And then you see them not doing it. And I'm always like, man, you really don't want to, or you just don't know how to. So I think that's very fascinating. So let's go past that network, right? So now, JD, let's just say that you meet with somebody and they say, hey, I don't think anybody in our family is ready to do this, but I think Charlie is down the street, right? I don't know Charlie very well, but how do you get to that approach where you can feel comfortable going and talking to Charlie? Remember, a lot of the folks that are listening right now are first timers. They don't really know what they're talking about in real estate. So they might be a little bit behind the eight ball, but they've got the confidence and the comfort that they want to be successful. How does that interaction go for you? Did you ever have that interaction where you went and talked to someone you've never met before and said, hey, I'm JD and I really would like your money, essentially is what you're asking them.
Yeah, I do that in a very, like I said, strategic way. Yeah, I've done it a number of times where I just reach out to a fellow investor. I'm like, hey, pick your brain, take you to lunch. And it's the same thing. You know, it's just, no, anybody can pick up the phone and call. So you not doing it, it's just the lack of wanting it on your part. All you got to do is once you have, hey, this person is successful, they invest in real estate, this person's an investor, this person's winning in the future, and you know that. Now you just have to call and trace them down to get them to meet with you. And
do you feel as though lunch is, cause I just was invited to lunch by a local real estate investor, a young lady who's doing great things, and her partner. And they said, hey, we really want to take you to dinner. And I said, and I was kind of, and then I went and I, you know, quite honestly had a nice time. We chatted. It was a great whole experience. And they're great folks. I wonder, you know, that interpersonal interaction where you're investing that time and sitting down for lunch and getting to know somebody. I mean, tell me the value that creates for the entire process. I mean, that's got to be such a huge part of the deal.
Yeah, all business is done on trust. Any business transaction, most business transactions are done through trust. And so you're just getting face to face with them, whether it be breakfast, lunch, dinner, and building that relationship, getting to know them or getting to know you. You know, hopefully you're making a good first impression. They're making a good first impression. But the whole point is to sell yourself, especially in those early conversations when you're first meeting somebody. It's just letting them know, hey, I'm a good person. Hey, I'm a caring person. Hey, I'm a driven person. These are my goals. This is what I need to get there.
Whether it be good person, caring person, trusting person. These are the characteristics you want to convey. And you convey those through the way you communicate, the way you dress, the way you present yourself, the way you eat your food and the way you talk to people. So you're not a slob and people are like, what is wrong with this person? Rather, oh my God, this person is an impressive individual. I like JD. I can see myself being a partner of JD's. I can see myself lending JD money because I think JD's going to pay me back. And that relationship is so important. And I think that's, I don't think we do enough of that in our country. I don't think enough of the real estate investors that are on the sidelines today are doing enough of that. I always tell people, come to my office, come meet with me, have a cup of coffee, just come here. And we get a couple people a year that stop by and say, hey, how you doing? How can I, but you know, there's not enough of them. I'm like, man, there's gotta be more of you out there that want to talk and learn. So,
if you're going to lunch every week, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
Like if you
go to lunch every week, once a week with somebody.
We are breakfast.
Yeah.
If you do week with somebody who you can help, it's not always about taking from somebody either. You want to try and add value as well.
For sure. So, JD, can we talk about what is the next 5 years going to bring for you? Tell me how you're on a roadmap. You're now at $2 million of net worth. You feel good about what you're doing. You're sourcing deals. So before we talk about the next 5 years, your day to day is what? How much time are you spending on real estate right now every single day?
So I still have a full-time W-2 job where I'm in medical sales.
Okay.
So I've been all raising a family, working a job. And I enjoy my job, and so I don't plan on leaving it anytime soon. But now I have the Finance Cowboy brand, which is great. And now it's become a business on its own. But I still am looking to buy properties all the time. This year, I got a goal to buy 10 more properties, just under by myself, single family, long term rentals. That's
so what your goal is 10 houses in 2023.
That's my goal this year.
Okay, can we track you online? Can we watch you do this 10 houses?
I'll document all on YouTube.
I'm watching. I'm taking the over, by the way.
Hold me accountable.
I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I think it's a great time. People are whining about interest rates. I'm like, you guys go ahead, but prices are dropping. The homes are sitting longer. I bought two properties, one closed in October, one in December. We got both of them around $40,000 under asking. They were on Zillow. I didn't even have to work, dude. And I was like, oh, I ran my numbers. Okay, this is what I need for this deal to make sense. Called the realtor. Why do they need to sell? One of them needs to move to Michigan. The other one was a state sale. I said, oh, they need to get out quick. 10-day closing, you know,
cash. Congrats. I love it. Boom. So just so everyone understands, JD still runs a W-2 job. So JD's building his wealth while he's creating a family, and he also has got a career. So everybody can do this. This isn't about any one particular path. JD's spending a lot of time on real estate. He's spending a lot of time selling medical devices. He's spending a lot of time with his four kids and wife and family. He's growing a business. So I just want everyone to be inspired by JD to say and think about, what are you doing right now to better yourself? How many houses are you going to buy in 2023? JD's buying 10. I'm betting on JD that he's going to buy more than 10. He's betting on 10, and I don't know who's going to take the under, but that person's going to lose. So I'm not worried about them very much. So JD, let's just talk through 2025 maybe. We're running out of time here, but I want to just get to the conclusion of kind of what's your end game? Where are you going with this real estate thing? What's your goals? Are you trying to get out of your W-2 job at some point in your career? When is that? What do you see your portfolio looking like in 3 years, 5 years? And, you know, and then I've got one closing question for you at the end. And then so I'd love to hear that answer if you could share that with me.
I believe, you know, my goal over the next 3 to 5 years, yeah, that's where this 10 house thing came from. Just me buying houses is 10 a year. So in 3 years, that's 30, 5 years, that's 50.
Okay.
Puts me, you know, I'd have to do the number off the top of my head. I'm trying to think net cash flow. That should be somewhere pretty. It should be what, 15 to 20 and 30 grand in cash, depending on where,
right,
you know, or and interest rates and all at that time. So, you know, that gets me to where I want to go. I also see, because of the brand with Finance Cowboy, you know, potentially raising some funds, whether it's through syndications or funds, and dabbling in the multifamily space and helping other people buy passively. I think that would be a lot of fun. I have that infrastructure in place through some acquaintances as well. So,
sure.
So looking at that future, continuing to scale the finance cowboy, and then working my job. I have no plans. People ask me this all the time because that's what's popular on social media. It's like, are you escaping the W-2? My W-2 doesn't feel like a rat race. I love it. I enjoy it. So I'm not, I always tell people, you gotta be real, real careful trying to escape something.
Right.
Because it's not on life.
Well, that's too much social media more than anything. I mean, having a nice stable W-2 job that comes in and you're comfortable every month, that pays your jobs and gives you insurance and feeds the family and puts some money aside so you can buy more houses is not a bad thing. I don't know what you would be escaping from there. People say, well, I have to go to work every day. I'm like, well, okay, I guess that's what you can escape, going to work, if that's what you want to call it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So JD, can you tell our listeners, because you mentioned Finance Cowboy a couple of times in this meeting, and I actually love the brand. I think it's brilliant. I think I'm disappointed in no cowboy hat, but now I recognize that earphones don't go over it. But just walk us through it. So Finance Cowboy, how do we find you online? How do we find you on the social platforms? Can you just tell our listeners how they can keep in touch with your journey and so they can follow you so that they can pay me, because I'm taking the over. You're going to buy 11 houses this year. How do they keep in touch with you, JD?
Hey, yeah. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. I would, you can find me on a couple of different platforms. I'm pretty much on all of them. So Finance Cowboy on Instagram, at The Finance Cowboy on TikTok, at Finance Cowboy on YouTube, and Finance Cowboy on Twitter. And so I started this brand in 2021, kind of out of spite, almost like a joke. And then it took off and it turned into a business. And now I really enjoy it. I put out tons of free content, do YouTube videos. We started that. We got a podcast that we've started up. So it's great. And then we have a whole mentorship that we open. It's closed right now. We open it once or twice a year. And I have a blast because I get to do what my best friend did to me. I get to do it to the students that come in. And so I'm helping them get their deals and analyzing them, helping them feel confident, giving them a kick in the rear when they're scared. So it's a lot of fun. It's been an absolute blast building this brand, getting to meet people like yourself and, you know, just made a lot of friends over the last, you know, almost 2 years. So I would love for you guys to come check me out, and you guys can hold me accountable and make sure that I buy at least 10 properties this year.
That'll happen. I tell you, I had the pleasure of viewing your content. I watch your content. I think, you do a very great job with the content. It's real. It's from investor to investor. It's true content. And I appreciate that content versus selling the pipe dreams and living in a different reality. This is a W-2 employee guy who is building a net worth and wealth through real estate, which is what all we try to promote in our world is be involved in real estate. Wealth produces cash flow. Real estate produces wealth and cash flow. And those two things you never can be upset about. They help you be disciplined and grounded. And JD, you should be very proud of yourself. Myself, I'm grateful for our time together. You've joined us today and spent some time with us, and we'll continue to follow your journey at Finance Cowboy. I want to thank you for your time. My name is Scott Lurie. We're with the Hard Truths today, and I want to thank JD for joining us. Please check him out at Finance Cowboy on all of the social platforms. And JD, thank you for being here. You've been a great guest, and I hope our listeners get to find some value in everything you shared with us today.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Awesome. Take care. Thank you.